Well, Happy New Year, and welcome to the Reasoning with an Optimist podcast for the week of January 3rd, 2016. This is Jack Brissett Mills. I just had a lovely conversation with Bridget on New Year's Day of all times. But first, the verses I wrote for the Calendar of the Soul verses that Rudolf Steiner wrote for his week 40. I wrote this one 2 years ago. Verse 40. When I get to the bottom of myself and re-feel my true foundation, the light and power that forged all things flows as love from my heart, replacing what there in me had been egotism. And this one I wrote just last year for the same Rudolf Steiner verse. Verse 40a. When I stop and go deeply quiet, far within I find the source of love, the very first creative voice, the fiery logos that fills what I had thought was all of me. Yeah, Bridget just graduated law school last summer and became a lawyer recently. Still not employed, but she's my lawyer, I know that. Thank you, Bridget, for the conversation. Here you go. So the idea was Steiner people, Waldorf people have these study groups and then they talk. And in the talking, it's different than normal conversation. It's trying to help each other with what the idea is in the air. Mm-hmm. Instead of, no, I think you're wrong, it's more, you mean to say, you're kind of building each other instead of cutting each other down. And then the subject matter is not the book you read, unless it is something that can lift people. Mm-hmm. It can certainly personal ideas are better than non-personal ideas, but the personal is more the kind that, you know, when you watch a movie, everything's personal, but somehow it reaches you because it's human. It's mm-hmm. it's not local. It's mm-hmm. bigger. So those are the basic ideas. I've been doing it now for half a year and a lot of fun. And so how to get a conversation started is always a trick. Unless you had an idea of a subject or a question, I'll stop there and see, did you have an idea for talking?
I don't have a specific idea. Something that I have been thinking about a lot recently, especially in the new year, is the concept of letting go and things, any sort of thing coming to an end, whether it's a relationship or being in school, because I recently graduated, and the idea of releasing something and having it be over without that being a cause for grief or concern.
Nice.
Maybe you learned what you needed to, and so you can let it go. But often the instinct is to cling to something even when it's not right or even when you know it's over and there's nothing productive to be had from holding on to that. But you just don't feel comfortable with releasing it and moving forward.
Yeah, here's New Year's Day, and you, I know, many people have these fires, and they often will write things down and then burn the things as some kind of symbol of letting go.
Mm-hmm.
This is new now. We're not going to hang on to that anymore. So it's definitely a human problem, maybe not the right word, but we cling to things that we know we shouldn't cling to. Although I must say it must be a personal predilection. I don't apparently do that much. I must have learned how not to. For me, it was decisions are constantly needing to be made.
Mm-hmm.
Where should I go to school is a big one, but when should I get up from the chair is just as big to me, because if I get up at the wrong time, I'm going to have a car crash.
Yeah.
Unless, yeah. You know, who knows? That opens up a bigger question of your belief system and such. if it's just randomness, it doesn't matter at all what time you get up. Except later you look back on it and say, well, if he'd only waited a minute.
Right.
But still, I tend to think there's a purpose to things, and there really is a right time and a wrong time to get up from the chair. So knowing that, I don't hang on to decisions I made before, because I know they're not important any longer. What's important now is the decision I'm making right now. And so for some reason, decades ago, I stopped hanging on to the past decision, because I know it doesn't matter anymore. What matters is, what are you going to do now? Well, now. And so I haven't ever gone to these little gatherings where you write stuff down and burn them, because I don't seem to need that anymore. But it's definitely something people need to get over somehow. Maybe you can talk about that. Do you have a feeling like it's something in your family or in you personally that you like to hang on, and you do need a ceremony to try to burn?
For me, I think it's a mix. There are things that have come and gone in my life, and I feel both in my head and my heart, this is done, it's over, and I have no problem letting it go. The door is just closes and I move on, you know? And then there are different things that one part of me will feel that it needs to be over, the head or the heart, but it's getting the two to agree that I think is what I've been working on. Like when I graduated from law school, I had no problem closing that door. That was, you know, I was ready to be done with school. I've been in school since, you know, the age of 4 or 5.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went straight to law school from college. Yeah, so I didn't have any sort of break. So when that was over, it was a relief, and it wasn't sad at all to walk away from that, because I was relieved to just not be in that position anymore and try and, you know, move forward with my life and start building a career. So for things like that, you know, no second thought, no regret there. I certainly would miss some of the people that I was in school with, but that's, you know, a different thing entirely.
So that's one kind of decision. That's one kind of realm where you're stepping away easily. What are the ones that aren't then? So human contact and animal contact, I suppose, and even plant. I went back to my hometown and found, oh my God, I was walking amongst these particular kinds of trees along the lakeshore where I grew up, and I feel at home again, and I hadn't realized that those were my friends. And so I somehow had left them behind without even knowing it. But there are different realms where we're easily, and it's difficult to walk away from them.
Probably the most difficult is human contact. There are, you know, friendships that have ended or, you know, changed as you move away or as you both grow up and not become different people, but continue to evolve in the person that you are. And sometimes there are relationships like that where you know that other person doesn't really have anything to give to you anymore, and you don't have anything to give to them. But because it's familiar and because it's been there for so long, you think, well, there's no way that I could just step away from that or just let it kind of relax and fade away. You think you need to cling on to it because it has been a source of comfort or wisdom in the past. So that definitely for me is the hardest, especially because I do have a need to be liked, and I know that about myself.
Yeah,
so if I step away from someone, even if the stepping away is what needs to be done, I still have the concern of what that person might think of me, even if I'm the one who's trying to take a step back from that person. Their opinion still has weight.
Me too. That's really why I couldn't really be a full-time teacher. I needed everybody to think I was good at what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't. It was with hundreds of people around, and parents and faculty. Someone is going to hate you somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. That's so interesting.
So I can't do it. I have to be a privately employed person with one customer, one client. Then I know that they like me. And if they didn't, I can go away. And
yeah, so you're not pulled in so many directions trying to please everybody.
What you just said.
Yeah.
Now, you're so young, yet you do have friends who have passed. I think at my age, so many people are gone, and I've had to say goodbye to so many things. It's much easier to say, well, that's just how it is. You just say goodbye constantly.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think that the loss of our classmate in high school definitely changed my perspective on relationships.
Yeah.
And in several ways, it was a blessing because it allows you, you know, fairly harsh perspective, but it's a very important perspective, which is, you know, there's a certain level of human interaction, the mind games people like to play, you know, things that people like to do to each other that are trivial, and there's just no point in engaging in that. And that definitely was resonant in me when I started in college, because it's a new environment. Nobody's supervised. Everyone's, you know, acting a fool, basically.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to get caught up in that world. But for me, a lot of my relationships, I had an easier time staying away from people or not letting them affect me when I recognized in them that they were not sincere and they weren't looking to really connect as a human being. They were just looking to party or play mind games or, you know, just do something generally immature. So it made it easier for me on the front end of forming relationships to recognize what I did and didn't want in the people that I surrounded myself with.
You're relating this to the fact that you lost someone you loved at an early age.
Yes.
You saw that you don't want to waste time with trivialities now.
Exactly. Yeah. There's just no point.
Yeah.
And before, of course, as a teenager, that's the perfect time to be engaged in trivialities. And that's, you know, defines you on the day-to-day usually. But after that happened, after Colin passed away, it just kind of stripped everything bare.
Yeah.
And I couldn't even fathom why I would bother engaging in those kinds of things.
Right. Which is the same thing that happens to people with their own illness scare or accident scare. You must know people who have nearly died.
Yes.
Accident and otherwise. Faith is one who she remembers being in the air, upside down in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And all this amazing picture of her life went through. I think she's much better as a person now.
Mm-hmm.
When you can have your own realization of what's important.
Yeah, I think it's something you also recognize in other people. If they have had a similar experience, even though the experience itself will be, of course, completely different, you recognize that person has been through whatever they have in their history that has allowed them to let go of, you know, the trivialities and recognize who they are and what they want from their life, which makes it much more easy to connect with them on a deeper level, because they're willing to present their true self, I think, more easily, because they don't see any point in hiding that or engaging in the social games where everyone, not even, you know, a sexual or a romantic relationship, any kind of relationship, people feel like they need to present a certain persona. But the people who don't do that are usually the ones that I like the best and want to spend my time with.
I think it's an American Indian, but maybe not. I remember this thought. Don't be with anyone you wouldn't want to die with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more of a warrior point of view. So
right.
Maybe it's an American Indian warrior kind of a philosophy. But I've been with people in a car where there's a sudden tense moment and someone screams. And I realize if we had died right then, I would have been very sad to be with that person. I don't want to be dying hearing that as my last thing I heard.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, I guess what we're talking about is a wisdom in a certain sense. You live a little longer, you start seeing what's important, the right kind of people, the right kind of energy to spend on situations.
Yeah, and I think that the people who are more in touch with themselves that way do tend to also be more able to let go when it's the time to let go.
Yeah.
Because they are in touch with themselves and they understand that, you know, this particular experience or relationship might be transient, so they when it needs to be over, they have an easier time just accepting that or knowing that that's what's right, as opposed to being like, well, what will people think if we stop being friends, or what will people think if this happens? I can't do it because of, you know, how society might react or how I've been taught, you know, what acceptable behavior is.
It's hard to I'm totally with you. I think it's hard to, here I am older now, so I don't have the problem. But if I was amongst, I think when you're younger, you're around more people. And it's just assumed younger people are going out more and seeing more. And people my age, maybe we don't have time anymore for that. We're too busy doing what we know we should be doing. But it would be very hard for me now, I think, with the knowledge I have now, to go back and not to appear to be really a jerk or a snob, because I'm not interested in wasting my time with people.
Well, and there are instances in which I stand apart in that kind of way. At, you know, I'm almost 26, but I still experience peer pressure, which is an odd thing if you think about it objectively.
Yeah.
Just recently, I was hanging out with some friends, and I wanted to go home because I was tired and I had stuff to do the next day because I was interning at that point. And I needed to be on my A game.
Yeah.
I needed rest. And also, when I want to go home, I want to go home.
Yes.
Because I like my bed. But they were adamant that I needed to stay out, specifically because I needed to drink more.
Of course.
And it was 2-1. And I've never been really susceptible to peer pressure, even in college.
Right.
I've never chugged a beer. I've never shotgunned a beer.
Yeah.
I've never done a beer bong because it never interested me. So I was like, no. But in this instance, I kind of took a step back and I was like, this is absurd.
Yeah.
I'm almost 26 years old and you're telling me that I need to get drunk.
Yeah.
And they weren't doing such a great job of sensing the tone in my response. And so it took them a while to realize that it was having less than zero effect on me.
Yes.
But I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Don't make me keep repeating myself. I'm not going to do what you want me to do. That's not what I want. And for you to try and push it on me is crazy.
That's smart. I think older people, though, even still have it. The parents whose child isn't quite learning to read as quickly as other kids, they really feel it. They can really feel it. And it doesn't go away when you're 30 or 40.
Yeah.
You still are affected by the groups. You know, we have this group mentality. We're pecked on if we're different.
Yes.
And
it's interesting that you say that, because at Thanksgiving, my boyfriend and his sister came and joined, and it's primarily a Waldorf group.
Mm-hmm.
And they were learning about Waldorf education, and one of the biggest differences that they noticed as, you know, non-Waldorf educated people learning about the system, they noticed that Waldorf didn't chastise students for being different in the same way that it happened in public school.
How did they know that?
There are a few examples. One of them was when I first started to write, I wrote backwards, like completely backwards.
Cool.
No idea why.
That's cool.
But, and I was the only person in my class, like, writing with, I can't do
it
anymore, unfortunately.
I want to see.
But every single letter was backwards and every word and everything. So it was full writing, but it was just completely reversed. And I was writing with my left hand. And Chris, my boyfriend, was like, he was very surprised by the reaction that Waldorf had to that, which was not really a strong one. And he was like, and they just, you know, you just figured it out. And I was like, yeah, at one point I sorted it out and then I, you know, carried on living my life.
Yeah.
And he was shocked by the lack of reaction that I wasn't put in a different class, that I wasn't made to be the other, you know, from the general group of the students. And I know, of course, any student who needs extra help is singled out by virtue of that fact because they get the extra help, but just the attitude with which it was approached, which was not that this child is broken.
Yeah. And they're actually trying. Look, they're sitting there and they're doing something. You know, that's a wonderful thing.
And I have, you know, formative memories of that time in second grade, but I don't have any memory of feeling bad or feeling different. Yeah. Or
Where
feeling like I was in trouble or couldn't do, you know, what I needed to be doing.
Try these new glasses with the prisms to make you see differently. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have any, you know, sensory memories of being sad or feeling ashamed.
So he saw that and
yeah. And he pointed it out because he was just surprised that there wasn't a stronger reaction because what he was used to was if you're slow, you know, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
And the teachers as well as the other students make you the other. So that was really interesting to me because, you know, if you having grown up in the Waldorf community, I don't have the other experience, which is the negative one.
Mm-hmm.
So when he pointed out how different it was for him, that was interesting for me to hear because I didn't have to go through that.
Right.
So of course you kind of take it for granted because you get it the good way. The supportive way.
You might have found what I found when I was young, the peer pressure idea. Again, the people who are already quite different, they were kind of more fun to be with because they already realized the value of peer pressure. They've already been beaten up by it, and they realized how stupid it is. So for me, it was the gay, lesbian kids.
Mm-hmm.
They were much more interesting because they were mostly, those were the art students in that day. That was so odd to be gay that they were also going to be odd in every other way. They're going to have weird hair and weird
make it a point to be odd.
And so those were the most fun people. They'd already broken through and they knew the value of relationship. They knew the value of not wasting time.
Yeah, for me that reminds me of my sister and I kind of had this experience together. Throughout the years, we've been called weird a lot, and especially after we left Waldorf,
What's
because
the
that
word?
Weird,
oh weird,
because that education is so different and most people haven't heard of it. And when you kind of start to explain, they're like, oh, it's like Hogwarts, or, oh, you lived in the woods with the fairies. And you're kind of like, I mean, yeah, I did. So she and I would be called weird a lot. And we came to own that word, basically.
Yeah.
We were like, we knew that it was meant pejoratively. But after a while, both of us, you know, individually kind of came to the conclusion, like, well, we don't want to be around people who aren't weird. Because if this is what weird means, this is where the fun people are. Normal is boring. Your quote unquote normal is just conforming to what everyone else is doing. And why would you want to do that? So we kind of, you know, we turned around the word because we were like, this is, I love to be weird. It's the most fun.
We were trying to get to something about peer pressure and with relationships and not having time for superficialities. I wanted to mention this other idea of only have friends who've already died. And that doesn't mean literally. I read it somewhere. You pick up all these things and then you take them as your own. Now it's my thing. When I really have friends and I look at them and I say, why are you my best friend again? I realize, oh yeah, because you know what being dead means. They've somehow gotten over their normal self. They're not stuck in jealousy and pride and all these things that typify someone who is immortal, has all the time in the world to be jealous and angry. They've gotten rid of that. They somehow, either they've had the accident or they've had the illness. For me, it was dreams. I've died so many times in my dreams. I've been the Jewish prisoner of war in the Nazi camp. So many times I've been shot in the ditch behind the barracks.
Oh, wow.
And so I know very well what's important about being alive. And when I look around at my best friends, I realize they have that same characteristic. And so that's a nice phrase, that all my friends have died, in a good sense, in a good way.
Yeah.
They understand the value of life. You truly understand life when you've died.
Yeah. And I think that the perspective that is lent to you when you have an experience like that changes how you, definitely changes how you interact with other people. And also it changes the energy that you bring. I think that the people who have been through something traumatic or life-changing or just a turning point, you know, an accident or something like that, they have an ability to connect more deeply with other humans and to empathize much more deeply. I think that the most important thing, one of the most important things that I learned from losing someone in terms of interacting with other people who are hurting or grieving is that everyone's pain is individual. And the best thing you can say, the thing you should never say actually to someone, is I know how you feel. And so I think that having your own individual experience like that gives you the knowledge that you'll never know how that other piece, that other person is feeling. And the only thing you can offer is your support, but you never say, you never trivialize it or compartmentalize it by saying, I know how you feel.
Or you'll be better soon, or you'll get over it.
Yes.
All these horrible things.
Yeah. Like, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Telling the other person how to feel, and from the perspective of, you know, I'm putting myself in your shoes and I know what's in your head or in your heart. I think that's just, someone who's been through an experience knows that that's never the case.
When I think back to your group grieving together that week or month or several months, it was so amazing to see you growing, actually growing, and not sinking, not getting worse, but in embracing each other, learning love, learning the importance of relationship. So many amazingly good things happen from tragedies. Again and again, you think, how could anything good come out of this thing?
But
the growth you all had together and the love you felt for the lost soul and the living, the living partners.
Yeah. Well, and I, even now, sometimes if I'm going through a hard time or I'm reaching out spiritually, I speak to Colin.
Yeah.
I've done that multiple times, and that's not something that's really faded away as time has gone on. He's someone that I still talk to, and his energy is still very present to me.
That's the cool thing for me, too, that I've got a Facebook friend. He was a student of mine, one of my first students. He died maybe 10 years ago now in a car crash. And I still, you know, Facebook, they say in 100 years, we'll all be on Facebook dead together because they never disappear.
Yeah, and so, I haven't heard that, but it's true.
So people keep, every time it's New Year's Day or his birthday, people are posting. And, and definitely I'm with that guy all the time, not just because of Facebook, because I really feel that guy. And maybe the dead are closer to us because there's no barrier any longer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe that's a better thing too about growing, not in a morbid sense, but when I was your age, probably I knew one person who had died, but now there's dozens, and if you make it to 90, everybody you've ever known mm-hmm. is gone. It's
yeah.
And so that's got to be a wisdom. It's got to be a good thing. It's got to be a growth that you understand better.
Yeah, and just accepting the inevitability of it, because when you're young, the general consensus is that you are invincible.
Yep. Yep.
And so it's easy to distance yourself from the knowledge of
yeah.
the people you love dying as well as yourself. And especially because in our society, I know that, you know, many ancient societies didn't have the same fear of death. And, you know, coming back to the beginning of our conversation, the clinging, the clinging to life is what we do now.
Yeah.
Medicine is designed to keep you alive as long as possible.
Yeah. Facelifts.
yeah, and looking young. It's all about being young. Yeah. And I think that, you know, the other societies, ancient societies that sometimes even revered death, or at the very least, it wasn't hyped up, basically, like it is now.
Yeah.
It was a natural part of life, and it was generally accepted from when you were young until it actually came to be your time.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, now that I've reached a certain age, I have to finally acknowledge that it's going to happen.
It's certainly not a fear. I think it's more of a... I'll think about a child not wanting to nap. I really try to think that that's how it is with us.
Mm-hmm.
We're just, no! and we just don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But every adult knows, oh, it's okay. You're going to wake up again. It's going to be fine.
And yeah.
That kind of thing.
You're tired. You need to nap.
We do not know anything about after death. We don't mm-hmm. have the slightest idea of it. We then pretend we know, and it's nothing, it's hell, or it's nothing, or
mm-hmm.
some horrible thing. And we don't have... Why would that be any smarter to know that than to know anything else? You could say anything about afterlife.
Yeah.
And no one can argue with you. It's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And if it helps you live better. Have you felt that you're in a group in life? I remember starting to feel at your age that, you know, there seemed to be a group of people on Earth that are my people, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That they're not necessarily family members. And in my case, it was maybe only one family member. But many, many people are my brothers, my sisters, that I'm there with them.
Mm-hmm.
And in my dream life, too, I would see other people. Oh, those people are part of my life, too. I don't know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Have you felt this, that you're in a kind of a group at all?
Yeah, not geographically, because a lot of the people that I've grown close to are spread out.
Yeah.
But there are definitely, I think that I've been lucky in the friendships that I've formed, because I have what we refer to as our Hendrix family.
Mm-hmm.
It's a group of individuals that most of them were my sister's age, but some of them mine as well. And we all keep in touch with each other's lives. We all, you know, for the important milestones, for the weddings and everything, everyone gets together. We try and see each other at least once a year. And those relationships that I've formed that have lasted this long, I feel 100% myself when I am with those people. And I know that they are comfortable to be exactly who they are as well. And that's definitely also the case with my family. I think that I'm also very lucky in the relationship that I have with my family. And I get a lot of comments from other people when they meet my family and they see how we interact. Some of them are like, man, you really like your family. Some of them say it in an admiring way. Some of them say it in a kind of surprised and maybe a little judgmental way, which I'm fine with that. But yeah, I know that I do have a situation that's perhaps not the norm. A lot of my friends have parents who have separated or who just don't have positive relationships if they're still together. But the relationship that my parents modeled for me is definitely one that I want to emulate. And of course, Jenny and I are extremely close. People were shocked that we lived together in college.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, you really want to do that? And for me, I was like, well, I lived with her for 18 years.
Yeah.
It's not like there are any surprises there.
Yeah.
But she and I have only grown closer as we've gotten older. And that is definitely something that I treasure But yeah, I think that the group right now feels a little more disjointed because everyone's everywhere else. And also because I'm in a period of transition.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for work, but I don't have a job yet. So I'm kind of in limbo. And it's the first time in my life that I've been in limbo like this. I've always had a next, whether it was, you know, going on to the next year of school or going on to the next school.
Yeah.
There's always a set plan. So now I have choices, but I don't know what to do with them because I feel like I'm kind of waiting.
Which is a new experience, right?
Yes, it's definitely new. It's
cool. You want new experiences. I wondered about the group idea I brought up was like a feeling of recognition when you meet someone. I know you really well. Someone else you meet, like when I met my spouse, I felt that that was someone I didn't know, but I wanted to enter that that stream. You know, I want to be part of this.
Yeah.
Where other people, I go, man, I know you so well. Immediately, you're my friend.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter where they live. Many, many people now I'm in love with, and I never see them. They're far away.
Yeah.
I totally know I can go live with them right now. I could give up everything and go live with them, and it'd be fine. But anyway, I feel like there's a group, and I wondered about when you meet people, can you tell right away you're part of my group or you're someone I want to be part of, or does it? Do you have any kind of thinking like that when you meet new people?
Is it? Yeah, I do. I definitely do have a sense for the kind of person that I'm meeting and how I'll relate to them. And it's interesting that you bring that up because I've had multiple conversations with people in my class at Waldorf, and we've all agreed that we have, in general, an easier time connecting to any kind of person. Huh. I'm not sure what it is about the way we were raised or brought up or schooled, but each person individually had noticed in their own life that they had remarkable ease in connecting to other people, noticeably over the people that they already knew. So other people would notice them in social situations, having an easier time talking to people or even recognizing the type of person that they were. So that's something that definitely comes naturally to me. And I really like what you're saying about, you know, someone that you meet and you know them right away and you know that you connect with them already. And then the other, where you know you don't know them, but you know you want to be close to them. Yeah, definitely. I think a combination of the two, the people you surround yourself with, is the ideal.
But there, when I think back to my first house and the kids I played with, I have no interest and no possibility even of trying to see them again. They're part of my youth. I needed them desperately.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no connection to them now. If I did a Facebook search and found them, what the hell do you want? You know, they would not want to know me anymore. And so I'm totally fine. We were talking about letting go of things. And I think there's a knowledge of a timeliness of a relationship. And, okay, it's gone now. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the worst things about Facebook is people do not get it. It's over.
Yeah.
Why do you keep coming back?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's definitely human instinct to dwell on something even when it's no longer productive or helpful. And I think the timing is also interesting because there are times in my life when I've met someone or connected with them, but it was the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I connected with them in a certain way, but we should have connected at just a different point in our lives.
Yeah.
And we could have given each other much more
if
that were the case. And that's definitely a sad occurrence, but it's something that I've experienced and, you know, recognized multiple times. Like, well, this could have been much different, but it just, this is the way, you know, the timing worked out whenever you got up from the chair or, you know, got in the car or met someone.
I'll share with you a great line I had. This was not a line to get someone's love, but to get away from someone without hurting them.
Mm-hmm.
So someone will approach you and say, I know we are meant to be, you know, we need to be a couple now. And the best thing I could think of was, I know what you're saying. I really believe what that means is we have been lovers or we have been together or we are in the future going to be, but your timing is way off.
Mm-hmm.
Look at me, you know, look at where I am. I've got this person or I'm doing this. So timing is everything. Timing is everything. So you're off, but I totally legitimize what you're saying.
Yeah.
I totally believe what you're saying,
but
your timing is off. So try it again.
Yeah.
Try it again some other time.
Yeah. I think that it's a mark of maturity when an individual can recognize that the timing is off without attaching their ego to that.
Yeah, that you don't like me or...
Yeah, without it becoming a petulant, you know, that they're hurting you. If someone recognizes, you're right, we do have this connection, but this isn't the right time or the right place. I think that it takes a level of maturity because you have to step outside of your own immediate wants and needs and recognize the situation for what it is, which also requires recognizing what the other person needs. Because a lot of people my age, it's I statements.
Definitely.
I want this, and, you know, you need to get on board because I want you to date me, or, you know, but it's always the I. And they're shocked when the other person doesn't react in the way they hoped. I'm like, if you're recognizing the person for who they are and supporting what they need, it's different to say, I want you, to then to say, I want to be near you and support you, and I want to build a relationship with you. It's still an I statement, but it's very different.
I want to ask you, in the 20s, how do you learn what love actually is? Is it through movies, or do you really do it on your own? For example, the idea that I think love is that you're doing something for others without any repayment. You're not looking to get it back. You're doing it because it's the right thing to do. You're doing effort. You're showing up. You're doing the work. And you're not saying, okay, now you owe me. You're not. It's not a quid pro quo. It's it's totally, this is right. This is what I'm doing. I'm taking care of this person now. Or I'm walking this person to school. Or I'm going to pick him up after school. Somehow, how do we learn that in the 20s? It seems like you're already getting close to it. How do you do it? Is it through movies or is it just through bad experience? This was not love. I can tell right away that wasn't love because it didn't feel right. It wasn't.
Probably a mixture of everything. I'm sure environment is a big factor.
Seeing happy parents, of course.
Yes, definitely. And seeing that my parents have never stopped trying to evolve the way they communicate. They've never gotten complacent. They're always working on communicating better and better. And that was one of the best things I think they modeled for me is when they were at their 25th wedding anniversary, I think, my mom asked my dad what was the hardest thing about being married to me for this long. And he said, talking about everything.
Wow.
And she said, okay, well, what was the best thing? And he said, talking about everything. So the hardest part also turned out to be the best.
Great.
But I think that, in your 20s, I have no idea. This is the time when my friends are all over the map also. Yeah. Not
and
just geographically, but in their life.
I bet many of them get married too, of
yes.
course.
And there are marriages that I've seen that I know that resonate with me as the right step.
Yeah.
And there are some ones that I've seen that I have, you know, very bad feelings about.
But then again, they may surprise you. Who knows?
Yeah. But just from what I know of the situation, I have, you know, concerns or obviously it's not my life. It's their decision to make.
Yeah.
But I think that for me, the best way you can love someone else is to put them above yourself. And a lot of people my age, it's not about the other, it's about the self. Mm-hmm. It's about what I want and what I can, you know, grab and again, cling on to. And you have to be always aware of the other, I think. And if you're both trying to build each other up, then you're creating a mutual relationship that actually embodies love.
I was just thinking of the different sizes of wedding ceremonies. Usually the younger you are, the bigger you want it.
It's a show.
But after age 30, that's just, you know, just quiet.
Yeah.
And that really is some telling thing that you don't need that anymore. You really know what you're doing.
Yeah.
The older you get. Personally, it was 30 for me. I could not. I was close to it several times. I was very romantic.
Mm-hmm.
But each time I knew it would never have lasted. If I had done it, it would not have lasted.
Mm-hmm.
30 was the very youngest I could possibly think. Maybe I can actually make this last.
Yeah, well, I think that a lot of people who get married younger, I can't fathom myself getting married at this point in my life. And I feel like I know myself very well. Obviously, there are still things to learn. I'll spend my whole life getting to know myself.
Yeah.
But I definitely think that the younger you get married, the more that would frighten me because you as an individual, and especially as an adult, are going to evolve so much. And if you're not secure in who you are and your direction in life, then committing to someone else, when after that you could just, you know, become completely different people with completely different aims. I'm always surprised when people who start dating in high school are dating later on because you go through so much personal transformation. It's amazing to me when you're still interested in being with that other person all the time.
That's marvelous.
So I feel like you're both two completely different people at that point.
Or they I mean, the good luck of changing together.
Yeah, going navigating it and changing and going to different colleges or whatever, and you still find that person to be, to have such a connection with you, that's amazing to me.
We had to stop it there for mechanical reasons. I ran out of my card space. I had a previous conversation I had forgotten. Anyway, apologies. It was long enough, I think, anyway. Thank you for listening so long. You're wonderful listeners, very contemplative people. I'm glad there are such as you. Thank you for listening all this last year. I'll try to keep these going until August anyway. If you are sitting out there somewhere in the world and you'd like a conversation with me, it's very possible. Skype. On my end, I'll call you from my computer and we'll have a conversation. It would be lovely to meet someone that way. Let me know. Go to my website, reasoningwithanoptimist.net, and I'll be happy to communicate with you. This is Jack Brissett-Mills. Happy New Year. Bye-bye.